What a super special month November was for us sports fans. Dominated by rugby, the FIFA World Cup qualifiers brought all the emotions to, plus the Proteas defied the odds and the haters once again. And now, as a super summer special, you get to catch up on all of this right here with Ben, Sandile and Kate. Not only are they going to unpack all of the biggest sports stories from the last month, this episode will also unpack how 2026 is just outrageously stacked on the rugby front with the start of the new Nations Cup, plus rugby's greatest rivalry tour, seeing the All Blacks finally having a proper tour to SA. So strap yourself in for an hour of sporting fun. It's episode 71 of the On The Bounce Show. Let's get into it. It is December. Welcome to it. I just got to say, I'm so happy right now. As a person, as a sports person, I am so incredibly happy. The year is coming to an end. Arsenal are on top. The Springboks are on top. Temba Bavuma's test team is on top.
Yes, sir.
Guys, this is one of the best intros to get into a sports show.
Yes,
Sandile,
let's do
lovely
it.
Lovely to see you again.
Great to be back. I mixed it up because Kate is here. No United
what
shirts.
What do you mean?
No United shirts. I took a throwback. I've got the 22 Kaka. So yeah, shout out to AC Milan.
That is a beautiful piece of drip.
Let the record show.
Kate, you're looking resplendent as always. Yeah, guys. I mean, it's just what an incredible way to end off November with the box winning.
Yeah.
Temba doing, like I said, guiding that team to wonders in India. We're going to get all the way through this as we recap November because it has been such an amazing month. But on the show today as well, we're also going to throw forward just how incredible 2026 is going to be rugby-wise. So we're all going to go our separate ways for holidays the next few weeks, but we want to arm you with all the amazing things to kind of just take into these next few months and special focus on the football.
Yes, sir.
Because let's be honest, football does not sleep in holiday time.
It does not.
If anything, it actually
cranks up.
Kate, just a quick little check-in. Liverpool, how are you feeling?
It's been a mess season.
I'm not going to let Kate get away with this crime.
What do you mean?
This crime of November. What is the record?
9 out of 12 losses.
9 out of 12 losses.
And I will go back to what I said when you invited me on the show the first time. Mm. No one wins a league in November, because especially Man United. I don't know why you sound like Nas Boots now.
Your cliches are getting very tired.
No, but they're cliche for a reason, guys. They're still true. And the thing is, and I'll say what I said the last time again, Man United, you can't be this loud. You've done nothing.
Well, you know, 9 out of 12. The last time I checked in with Kate, you were above us. Oh, we're 6th and you're what, 8th?
Well, we will get to the log in a little bit.
You're 9th. So I don't understand. Ben is the only person who's allowed to have a conversation about EPL.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, we will
we're
get
not
into
banter
it.
Era, guys.
We will get into it. So another thing we're going to get into is December the 14th is going to be the Greens and Gold golf documentary. So we all love Chasing the Sun.
Yep.
So Stinger GC obviously is SA's team within LIV, and in March 2026 is going to be South Africa's version of LIV is going to be here at Stain City. So December the 14th is going to be the premiere of this series that's coming out. And to lead into that, I participated in something that's called the Light It Up Challenge, which we're going to show you right here. Our golfing summer is about to get a lot hotter with the Stinger GC Light It Up Challenge. It's your chance to win a live experience with your favorite SA golfers by simply hitting a golf ball into your braai. Just like Brian Habana did, eventually.
Do we know how many takes it took Habana to get that in? Guessing it was a long shoot. Oh, that's in, isn't it? I guess the haters are going to say it's going to have to stay in. Yeah. Give it the banner.
Woo! Woo! Yes, baby!
Superhero entrance. Take that, BH. CZ James, Robbie Cruz, I challenge you to the Light It Up Challenge. But I challenge everyone, really. Submit your Light It Up Challenge where you hit your ball with zero fire. No fire will be allowed. Hit your ball into your braai. Tag Stinger GC. And you could be one of 30 people at the early watch party for the Greens and Gold documentary. premiering on Supersport on the 14th of December. It is like the chase in the sun of golf in LIV for the Stinger GC guys. And you get to watch it a week early with a whole bunch of guys, including the Stingers players. So submit your Lighted Up Challenge. And if you're one of those 30 people, you get a further chance to actually be with the Stingers team at Pinnacle Point, middle of December as well. Greens and Gold will be a five-part documentary series running from December 14th to January 11th. It's going to be blockbuster viewing, all behind the scenes that you really want to see from the Dinger GC team. And yeah, pretty much the perfect way to start the golfing summer. Light It Up Challenge. Robbie Cruz and CZ James. Let's see it.
All right. Didn't know
what... didn't know what the point was. Crazy.
So, spoiler alert, you'll see more of me on the documentary series as well. I interviewed a little bit about my take on the Stingers, which I'm hugely excited to share with you. But, Kate, you also participated in this. You also lit it up in your own way.
I did.
Thanks. I'm pretty sure you can... We got some visuals here.
I'm not
going
to even hate her golfing technique better than mine.
Okay. So Kate, you were trying this at the gym, which was really interesting.
Where else was I going to find a golf course?
So obviously you just squatted,
just
double your body weight,
yes,
and now you're hitting ping pong balls.
No, that's actually a real golf ball. No, so it's a proper golf ball.
No, how many takes did you do? Sir?
Listen, Brian, I've been on Zed the whole day.
No, great. You know, I'm sticking it for BH here. BH did it first time and they weren't rolling. And then it took
that's
you
a rumor. But we need the fact.
And you know, in BH, I always trust.
Listen, Brian Habana had the whole day. I was allowed the whole day. That's
okay,
but you
were scooping ball. Why is he not going, Kate?
No, this because I asked him to show me. What you don't see there. Also, you had it in four shots, Ben. I eventually hit one. Listen, I have never held a golf club until that moment right there. So what you don't see there is my coach, CrossFit coach, showing me where my pinky needs to go in
Kate,
relation
you know more
to...
more than me on
in,
this one.
Exactly. In relation... Yeah, listen, it's a white man's sport. Yeah, don't leave me hanging. What you don't see there is like where my pinky is supposed to go in relation to my index finger. I've never seen all of that. And Josh takes... Patient man that Josh is, who can overhead around 120.
I didn't want to get into the forensics of how bad you are, but I wanted to show you to say well done. I mean, you're not a Thank golfer you. And you tried this.
I did, and I didn't do too badly actually. That was the first time I held a golf club.
I was expecting
guys.
Worse. You didn't miss it once, but yeah, December the 14th. I mean, even if you're not a golfer, this is the great thing about LIV. This documentary series is going to be really, really great, and it's just another thing to add to our sporting summer.
It's going to be a crazy, crazy couple of...
It really is.
I did the chat. And OG, who's Mr. Golfer like you, you all did pathetically.
Pathetically is
yes,
a deep word.
Did pathetically.
You got in the fourth shot. Ben, you play golf every other day. When I have never held a golf club until that moment.
If you're going to take me on in the show, take me on about the right things, not
what
golf.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
You have...
Four shots, Ben. I expected that in the first, second.
In her defense, you are like a pro. So.
Thank you. In my eyes, you're the pro.
Well, let's keep it that way. So, guys, let's kick it off with the rugby, okay? So, we just had the most amazing month because we actually had five Springbok test matches.
Yeah.
It started with Japan. We showed them the respect of saying, Connor, estimate them, 61-7, take that in your face. We then had the French game. I'm just going to run through quickly, then I'll break it on there. We're the French game where we're down to 14 men, didn't bother us. We're the Italy game, down to 14 men even earlier, also didn't bother us. Yeah. Then it was about taking on Ireland, and we humbled them.
Yeah.
Like, I was just thinking back the other day, it's like people will look at the scoreline at a glance, but that game was so much more than scoreboard.
Yeah.
And then we just had the Wales game scheduled, and it turned out to actually be...
A massacre, a bit of a bloodbath.
It was a bit unfair. So, Kate, we'll start with you. Just thoughts. I mean, we knew that the guys were going to go in as favorites to most of these games.
Yeah.
France and Ireland were going to have a stern challenge for us. But, like, your thoughts now, this Bok year coming out of those last five games?
Oof. I actually forgot it was five games. It's been so long. I forgot
November,
about Japan.
November was that big.
It was that long. Best month. All the Valentine's babies were born in November. Just saying. So for me, my favorite game, in case you missed it, I was born in November. Thank you. I know you're saying wrap up the whole five games. Like I said, I forgot about Japan, but I love that France game. France game for me was definitely my favorite. And I think that's a game that reminds you who the Springboks are. Because obviously you need to take into account who the French are and also the context leading up to that game. Siakourisi's 100th game, ninth Bok to the feet. Also, France, so loud. Oh, we stole the World Cup. I mean, do they mean hosting the World Cup? Because they kind of stole it from
they,
us.
They stole that, yeah. And that was actual theft.
And then they're like, oh, you stole the quarterfinals. How?
How?
You know what I mean? All those things. And you're like, and what I love about this, the South Africans, because as lovely as we are, we can be very petty, you know, and we'll remind you who we are when we can.
Because it means a lot to us. This, is what people, this is what people forget. Like a lot of sports nations are fans.
Yeah.
No, this is bigger for us. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. So call us petty, but it's just that it means so much.
And also sport is literally the only thing we have going for us, like as a country. Like we... Sport is the one thing, you know, this is the one thing that we can all collectively come together and be like, okay, listen, we'll stand up for our country. I mean, just going off topic here, you saw how united we are doing the G20, all of that. But like, that's who we are.
Yep.
The minute everybody leaves, we're going to go back to fighting again. But like, collectively, that's who we are. So I think for me, that French game was honestly one of the best ones. Obviously, you mentioned that red card. Then you're having to sacrifice your captain on his 100th game. But man, that Reynaud try.
Yeah.
Honestly, come on. Come on. That chip and chase was honestly
well, it was
so beautiful.
It was DuPont-esque. In the absence of DuPont
right.
at the Stade de France, it was poetic.
It was so beautiful. And also, it just goes to show like the over-reliance of the French team to the guys like you mentioned, DuPont and Pinot, those guys. And the way they started like a house on fire, which you expected from the French, but they just ran out of gas because their conditioning is obviously not the same as ours. Because the Springboks, 14 men, they're like, we'll manage this.
There was one of those endearing moments in the second half when the guys on the bench are literally
like,
saying,
They're tired. Yes. That was like the drama. I didn't know I needed. I'm like, Siya Kolisi, on your 100th cap, you're sitting on the bench. And there you are. You're like, they're tired. I was like, yeah. I mean, you use colorful language, but, you know, I think that for me was really good. Andrew Esteyzen, another game, like another, this tour again. I think he's obviously cemented his place in the 2027 Rugby World Cup.
Indispensable.
There's nobody like him. And honestly, that's how crucial he was in this game and against Italy when we were 14 men down. So for me, that was definitely the game of the tournament against Ireland. That was such an exhausting game. I know there was so many things going on with that, but for me, I was just tired watching the game. I was like, can we wrap it up soon? Can we wrap it up?
There are some cards on that one. Another red.
Sasha was very fortunate. If we're being honest,
and you look at
Diakha's red card, you look at who else got penalized, to the fact that they didn't even get a yellow card.
So yeah, if you especially look at the Franco Mostert situation, his red card was rescinded. I think on the back of being rescinded, to give the first card of the very next match to a Springbok maybe wasn't the best call.
Sasha was fortunate. If you go with the rules of the game and take the emotion out of it, and I think that's the other thing. When you got the red card in, or was it a yellow card in the Rugby World Cup final? New Zealand captain.
Same.
And it's like games like that. People always like to say, oh, it's a big match. You need to try to go. No, rules are rules.
You need to
enforce it from the first minute or the 90th minute. But it doesn't matter.
But you hit the nail on the head there. Take the emotion out of it.
Yeah.
You can take the emotion out of it.
And so if you had taken the emotion out of it, Sasha should have gotten at least a yellow card. At the least, one that needed to be reviewed, which possibly could have been upgraded. That for me, I thought that was at least a 20-minute red card straight out. 20-minute red card. But the fact that they didn't even get even a yellow, I was like, excuse me.
Yeah.
Are you just playing to the moment now?
This is what we must realize. Everything in life balances out a little bit,
It had to balance out.
So just to kind of like take your thing on that,
yeah.
is that did you enjoy the Ireland match? For what it was, or did you feel like to Kate, was it just a bit tiring?
Let me start with the whole, you know, past five games. I think for me, the biggest takeout is the buy-in from the Springbok team on Tony Brownbaugh. I think after all that brawn, and then you get expansive rugby, of course you won't be able to keep up. Everybody coming around the corner, mixing it up. And you can see players like Sasha and Mani Lubok really buying into it. And that's how, you know, they're getting all the points in. I think biggest taker.
It's almost like they need to be there to facilitate it for the rest of them to make it easier. Yeah.
100%. Seeing Sasha come out so well in this tour, I think he's got the most tries as a fly half. In only 19 games, he's got 9 tries. That future is incredibly bright. I think moving into the next World Cup, the blend between veterans and young players coming through is something that really stood out for me probably the most. But just in terms of the officiating, and I think the referees are going to have a hard time going into the next couple of years is the inconsistency of the tackle.
Mm.
Because that's the biggest thing that people took out. Because you're either too tall to get to a low guy, and where do you draw the line? You know, because you've got like 6'1" guy trying to tackle a five five guy. Of course, I have to get down. And then where do you call it? You know, and then I think the issue of the 20-minute red card versus a straight red card was a big issue because we never know when it's going to come in. You know, so I think that's something that we need to clarify moving on into the next couple of seasons of rugby, especially at a high level.
I hate it. I'll see you now.
Because it takes away from, and it's what we were talking about earlier, it takes away from the game itself. Mm. Either you let it flow or you blow it consistently, and then you're never going to have players on the pitch. That is the main issue. So that was the only thing that I took out. But Springboks have a great future ahead of them. That's what I took out the most. A lot of the young talent coming through. A lot of the older guys getting all the caps that they needed. Only thing, yeah, even Elizabeth got to be more disciplined. She can't be eye gouging a guy. You know, was crazy.
It's a really sad point that because let's just say he was absolutely eye gouged prior to that because something riled him up. Okay,
yeah.
Ibn's had one red card in his entire career. He's had one sighting his entire career.
Yeah.
Yes, he likes to get up. He's an enforcer. He gets in people's faces. He stands up for his teammates. Yeah. But he's not a thug. Yeah. Something happened for him to do that. Yeah. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Yeah. They're 73-0 up. It's the last game of the season. Something happened to Ibn to make him do that.
Yeah.
But you don't do that.
Exactly.
It's just that is the unfortunate reality is that if, like, eye for an eye,
Literally.
you just can't do that because it's so blatant and it looks so malicious. And now all of these things that we have been balancing on about your players are dirty, that's why they get the cards. So we're saying, no, it's unfair. The eye gouging in plain sight has now ruined all of that.
Yeah. But so everyone's... But it goes back to what you're saying, like take the emotion out of it. Like punish an incident for what it is, not collectively as a team. Oh, all of you are dirty. Look now, your point has been proven true because Elizabeth did that. No, like treat each incident for what it is. And I think for me, it's that whole... Because it goes back like when you think of a Bucky supporter, for example, and how many times he was sighted and all of that. Like, the minute he steps onto the pitch, you expect the refs are almost like already on edge. Like, what is he going to do? Any movement, that extra eye on him. And I think that's a bit unfair because it may be the day that he does nothing. Yes, he was also took on the role of being the enforcer. But he did that on purpose because then you get people like everybody else around him. His captain, John Smith, got to be innocent because it's like, hey, if Buckis doesn't handle that, then anything I ask is fine. You know what I mean? You can't expect a Buckis to be the one arguing with the ref for certain things because he's already got that reputation. And for me, I do think that like each incident needs to just be looked at
in isolation.
Yeah. Don't look at the team as a group. It's like, oh, this is what you guys do. Because, I mean, Franco Mostert, when have you ever seen a Franco Mostert being... That violent, if you want to put it like.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was a tackle.
But that's what I'm saying. It was a clean tackle.
But again, Lutoyaga, he wasn't trying to injure a smaller player. There's no malice here. Yeah. But now, on the back of Eben's such gratuitous act, you can call it that, because it was a finger in the eye with intention. All of that stuff is now, you guys are dirty. It all rolls into that because people generalize, let's be honest. Yeah. Now online, South Africans are hated so much more because you're going to get hated. You've earned the right to be hated as the world's best, but now all the other stuff is now being lumped into it.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, on X, I always poke the bear. I'm there for fun. People don't take me that seriously. Please don't.
Yo, please don't, guys. Yo, I see the comments.
But it's not a joke. You know, like people are now playing for cards. People are now like, oh, look what he did, look what he did. It's like being in junior school.
Yeah.
It's just childish. Yeah. Rugby's a contact game. We need to play it hard.
Yeah.
Final question on this, guys, before we look at the final world rankings for the year. I mean, like, are you bothered if you go online and people now see, like, South Africans are now the most hated of rugby nations?
Comes with the territory.
I mean, I feel like I hate it is a strong word. I mean, from the north, yes. But like, I think...
Sorry, from the north, yes.
From the north, no one cares about the north.
Because we've just been there, yeah.
Well, no one cares about the north. Yeah. Like, what has the north done?
I'm really happy with that very general take.
Like, listen, because the rest of the world who respect rugby, like the likes of New Zealand, they don't hate us, they respect us.
Yeah.
Because they've been there. They've been the most dominant nation and the world didn't hate on them. The world respected them. Yes, it was... If you can beat All Blacks, you've done something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now it's, if you can beat the Springboks, that's a sign of respect. That's a sign. And I'm happy with that.
It's an interesting point that, like, because Flex, can you bring up the world rankings for the current where the box are right now? So the world rankings by the end of the year, this is a big thing because now they do the seeding for the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
South Africa has 93.44 points. New Zealand finish off with 90.3. England 89.4. So that's the top three. Our lead is huge.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's quite, yeah.
And like, this is something for all South Africans to really celebrate, you know, like, because we take it so personally and because this team means so much to us, we say things like, we are the world champs. I don't think I've ever had more respect for New Zealand either, because they were with us for so long.
Yep.
And they were also, because right now, we're in a position where we've been number one before, but we are the undisputed best right now.
100%.
And that makes me respect New Zealand for so much more because of how long it was. Ireland are in fourth, France fifth, Argentina sixth, and Australia seventh, Fiji eighth, Scotland.
Australia got to come back up, man. Australia can't be living life like this.
The lovely thing is, like, leading up to our 2019 Rugby World Cup win, I think we were around eight, where Fiji or Australia are.
We were seventh.
And therefore, our seeding was terrible, where nobody gave us, because it was at the back of that 2018 season. And so now to go to a World Cup where you are, that's going to be a nice one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, World Cups are always interesting things, and we'll always have a plan for it. Scotland, for all their huff and puff, they ended up on ninth, Italy 10th. Australia lost every game in November.
It's wild, huh?
But I guess that's another story. That's,
you know, that's why they've got to come back up. The one thing
I want to
say about this international tour was, it's great to see international podcasts actually finally putting the hammer down and saying, guys, the Springboks are actually that great. I think we need to get over a lot of things. People like Justin Marshall saying, guys, geez, what do we say?
Well, I think a guy like Will Greenwood to say, like, guys, there's no one like the Springboks right now.
Yeah.
And just where I asked you both about the Ireland game is that, for me, the Ireland game was the most important because it was like, yeah, we can play with you a bit.
Yeah.
This is where we are right now. We've prioritized the structure of the game. We're actually going to play with you.
Yeah.
And after that, it was like, guys, we need scrums.
Yeah.
Other teams now need four great props.
Yep.
They need good four or five locks.
Mm. It was a great tournament.
So obviously straight away, even last weekend, back to the URC.
Oh.
Back to the storm is being amazing, guys.
Do I need to give you more depth once again? Could it be?
Shaz, I mean, like, when I left you on Saturday at Benchwarmers,
yep.
I watched a bit of the first half.
Yeah.
I saw a yellow card, Munster scoring tries.
Yeah.
The Oaks were down.
Yeah.
They somehow won that game. It's just incredible. Without the major box stars, the Stormers are now 6 out of 6, the only unbeaten team in the URC.
Yep.
And now we go Investec Champions Cup this coming weekend. So 5th of December onwards, that gets going as well.
Yep.
So, I mean, we've just gone literally from heavy international rugby to the best of franchise rugby. That's going to be exciting for me in December going forward.
Yeah, I think for me, once again, big credit to the Stormers and bringing in talent through. I think before we even talk about that other South African franchise, the Stormers, what they've done to start strong. As we've always, the last couple of years, we said, look, they always pick it up at the end. But now they've started strong, and now they're outright, I think they're outright favourites, especially after the Leinster thing and Munster as well.
Because Munster were the top team.
Yeah, so now I'm just like, Stormers have a legit chance now. And also without the Springbok stars. So they've got a great team chemistry. That is what I love about the Stormers, you know. So big credit to them.
Kate, is a team going to go deeper in the Investec Champions Cup?
Do they want to? That's the thing, though, because you have to prioritize which cup do you want the most. Unfortunately, they don't have the resources to be able to say they're going to spread their squad into, let's focus on this. And I mean, there's still Curry Cup coming up next year and all of that. So those are tournaments you have to prioritize. In South Africa, you can't just let the Curry Cup be. You know what I mean? That's a tournament that the Stormers have.
I think Curry Cup could probably get left outside the off stump, but it's true, like, Chaz, your point and your point combined. The Stormers have now started so well in the URC. They've got a legitimate chance of a home final to keep going. Mm. Is the Champions Cup going to be one of those things like, we'll see how it goes? And it's a shame if it is, though.
I think the Champions Cup becomes second priority, especially after the start. And I think it becomes a platform for young players now to now get in their reps in, like they did this last week. So I hope they use that philosophy, because starting undefeated is huge in URC. So they have a bit of a buffer. Go give, you know, in the other tournaments, go give the young guys a run, especially at that high level. But focus on this, because you guys actually have a legitimate chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously the real big thing that's coming up as December starts is the FIFA World Cup qualifications are kind of wrapped up. There's a few we'll get into just now. But the actual, the pools, the games, everything's going to come out. Flex, I've got a really overly elaborate thing here with the pots.
Sorry, Ben, before we go to the World Cup, we're giving the Sharks a pots for a little bit for whatever's going on with them.
We can't keep kicking that Shark down. It's the same thing.
Let's give you the other pass. There's nothing to add for the Sharks.
Yeah. As a guy, his name I forget again, said, the Sharks are a clubhouse for the Box to live in Durban.
Jeez, no, the Sharks got a
retirement village.
Guys, we can't say anymore. Oh, Flex, bring up the pots. Okay, so if you're in pot one, you've obviously done particularly well in your group. Lekker, good things. South Africa are in pot three.
Oh.
Okay, so now on pot four, if you are looking at this, and I always say you must watch the show visually. In pot four, guys, there are still some undecideds. Yeah. Mm. So I just want to quickly run through the undecideds because, as we know, in Europe, England, France, Croatia, Norway, Portugal, Germany, Netherlands, Switzerland, Scotland, Spain, Austria, and Belgium. They're already there, okay? So that was another big thing for November, is that Scotland managed to get through. So now we have these semi-finals happening in March. So, for example, Norway won their group. Italy finished second in that group.
Yeah.
So Italy are now taking on Northern Ireland, who heroically got into this playoff match. The winner of The winner of that takes on Wales versus Bosnia and Herzegovina. So that's how these things are going to work going forward. So yeah. Ukraine take on Sweden, Poland take on Albania. The winner of those respective matches comes together for that final thing.
Yeah.
Turkey versus Romania, Slovakia versus Kosovo, Denmark, North Macedonia, same story. Czechia, Republic of Ireland.
I love it.
There is a lot going on here, guys. It's really fun because it's real high stakes to get there. Yeah. North America, that's all decided. So is Africa, Asia. South America, Oceania, New Zealand always get in there. I feel like that's just a loophole of geography.
Yep.
But then there's the Inter-Confederation playoff winners. This is a kettle of fish. Eh? So basically, New Caledonia will take on Jamaica to play against DRC.
The DRC, how did they get through?
Yes, because they beat Nigeria.
We'll
get to my Nigeria hate watch just now.
It's about and about. Yeah. And then Bolivia will take on Suriname to try take on Iraq to get the final slot.
So
this is all taking place in March, but the draw will go ahead before those matches, obviously. So that's going to happen now.
Yeah.
So Shaz, you're not unhappy about Nigeria not getting through.
Let me tell you something. There's something spectacular about Nigeria not coming through because the amount of hate watch we have against each other is very real. But it's once again a philosophy thing, not backing their Premier League, their local Premier League. And John Obi-Mikel said it best. He said, you're getting all these international players who aren't even playing at the highest level. And you've got a whole bunch of talent in their local league who are not getting the opportunity. So he used us as a case study. He said majority of these guys are playing at a high level in South Africa and in Africa. So strength, game time, all of that, and one unique philosophy that runs through from under 20 all the way to, you know, to senior levels. And they're not seeing that. And it's one of the biggest powerhouses. So this is going to actually be a big game changer for Nigerian football because I think they scrap everybody that comes out. And the big issue is that you've got a lot of European players who declare for their Nigerian citizenship if they don't get the European one or they don't get selected for that. That's what John Obi-Mikel's biggest issue is that you declare initially, you play under 20 in England, but you can see you don't have a shot in. Then you declare for Nigeria, then Nigeria picks you, but you got no game time. You're not well in the philosophy. And it's just they've destroyed that federation, and it's going to be interesting to see where they come out from that.
I mean, the federation has destroyed itself as well, because one of the things with Nigeria, I mean, the day before they played that playoff match against one of the Congos,
DRC.
Yeah. So they were protesting because they haven't been paid. So that's a night before you play arguably the biggest game for a long time.
Yeah.
So because the federation has just treated them so poorly, administration, mismanagement of funds. I mean, it's not unique because South Africa goes through that sometimes too, where you have the likes of Banyana Banyana protesting before they have to go play a big game. But that did not help matters.
Yeah.
And so definitely the federation did shoot itself in the foot with that. And then to expect such a big returns from these teams. But I don't think it's a great thing. I know even for it's nice to pick on Nigeria and be like, hey, look, we're there, you're not. But I don't think it's great for Africa that they're not there.
I agree, absolutely not.
They are a powerhouse for a reason. Mm. And to have a strong Nigeria means a strong African continent. African football needs a strong Nigeria to actually thrive. So Cameroon not being there, Nigeria not being there, I don't think that's great for Africa. We need these big teams historically who've done well at the World Cups to definitely be there and also to remind the youngsters that it's still a legacy to chase.
Yeah.
And so it's great that South Africa is there. But for me, I do think it's a tragedy that Nigeria and Cameroon are not there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer of that. That's why I never take joy in like knocking Man United, because they need to be strong in the league. I take no joy from knocking Liverpool.
My God.
But I mean, like, okay, further to that point, so there's some big teams missing, but like Panama, Caracal.
Yeah.
I always thought Caracal was that blue stuff you put into a cocktail. No, Caracal, it's
Chile is not there. I think that's big. Chile not being there, I think that's one of the big ones.
Yeah,
Haiti. Italy not being there. I hope Italy doesn't make it solely because of what their coach has been saying lately. We can hate on Europe, guys. Come on. Our colonizers, we can hate on them. So Italy not making this is going to be amazing. I'm going to
celebrate that. Just to that point, and everyone's entitled to how they want to grind their own axe, but Italy has lost two games in qualifying. They're second in a pretty strongish group. Brazil, the South American guys, they can go on holiday. They can pull a Neymar.
You get what you get. You play what's in front of you. Exactly. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And so exactly those comments. It says, we had a tougher route to get to the finals versus Africa. First of all, Africa has how many countries? About 54. You have 44 and you already have nine places more.
There's pure strength of like numbers. players.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying, but the point has been made. Thank you very much.
Don't crash me, it's Latina.
You play what's in front of you, guys. Okay. You play what's in front. Africa is rough. Football in Africa is tough. Yeah. I don't know why people think playing in our continent is easy to play football. Which country? I don't think anyone's ever said that. Not you, obviously. But which country in this continent doesn't play football well?
Yeah.
Very few. I mean, Seychelles has beaten Bafana many times. 100%. This just goes to show how strong of a football continent we are.
Yeah.
So you play what's in front of you. It wasn't easy for South Africa, guys. It wasn't easy with Nigeria there. Alone.
And also, like to Kate's point is...
Which one? There are about 17 there.
Kate's point with Nigeria, I just want to go back to Nigeria, is the African continent in football is catching up. And you saw that with Benin leading throughout our group and to drop it on the last game. So I actually felt a little bit more disappointed for Benin where they lost it on one game at the end of it. Then Nigeria blew it afterwards, you know. So you see the gap in African football closing, where if you don't back your local talent, you're going to have a big issue moving forward. You look like at Bafana, and I use them as the case studies, you probably got Lyle Foster. And everybody else is built around a spine of local football.
Yeah.
And you see that trickling down when we go play in CAF, where we go play in all these different tournaments, is that it's going to be an exciting place for, you know, building your local structures. Very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally, guys. I mean, I'm all for this. And I think people are starting to respect AFCON more as well now.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the past, it would be like, oh, we got to lose players to AFCON. What a waste. And it's like, actually, well, that's the Euros. Copa America.
Tell Jamie Carragher that,
but we'll get to him.
One day. No, we won't.
One day we will.
All right. One thing we do have to get to, of course, is the Premier League right now.
Yes, let's get to it.
Flex, let's have a look at the log. Because, I mean, obviously, time is shooting right now. We're going into a week where all the teams are playing twice. So this will change, guys. But Arsenal are top there on 30 points. Man City, after snapping a bit of a losing streak, they beat Leeds to get 25 points. Chelsea 24 points, and then it's a cluster. Aston Villa joining them on 24 points. Brighton on 22. Sunderland 22. Man United shares. Look at that top seven. Top seven, 21.
Europa.
Liverpool somehow hanging on to eighth because Crystal Palace have gone backwards. They're now at ninth, and then Brentford will always be kind of like 10. Look, this league's ridiculously stacked. It's ridiculously competitive.
Yep.
Guys, I don't want to dwell so much about what's happened. It's like we can balance this by what's going forward because of where we are.
Yep.
But just to look at the top three teams as we see them right now, all of them are in Champions League.
Yep.
So this is where you kind of fall away a little bit, Chaz. All of them are in Champions League right now. Arsenal, okay, so they beat Slavia Praha this last month.
Yeah.
Ha ha, it's this easy 3-0. But they also had some pretty tough games, and that Sunderland were a tough game.
Yeah.
They still remain a tough game. They won again on the weekend. They're still there, thereabouts. Arsenal drew with Chelsea this last past weekend that we had now. Without the central defenders, Trossard, I think people now understand how good this guy has been for the team. But still, Arsenal are there. They are value for their 5 points at the top there. It isn't a huge buffer. Let's not get carried away here.
But a buffer nonetheless.
But it is a buffer nonetheless. In the world's most incredibly, incredibly stacked league. Flex, can we bring up Arsenal's fixtures going forward here very quickly? So now in December, guys, there's 8 games. Am I counting right?
I think you're counting wrong.
2, 4.
Yeah, you're right. 8.
No, my contacts are acting up.
Eight games, guys. Eight games. Arsenal about to play 8 games. Starting 3rd December, Brentford at home. Aston Villa away on the 6th. Club Brugge away in the Champions League on the 10th.
Club Brugge.
Yeah, sure that too. 13 December, we get a bit of a run. So Wolves at home.
Damn, that's going to be the tester. 23rd. 20th to the 30th.
Liverpool in the form of Everton.
20th away to Everton. 23rd, Crystal Palace home for the EFL, the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
And then 27th, Brighton at home. And then Aston Villa home.
Aston Villa!
That's a big one.
How big is that month?
Yeah, but...
It's one of those things.
You play Villa home and away in the same month.
Home and away in the same month, yeah. So, Kate, I mean, obviously to your point that no one wins the league in November... If Arsenal,
you're definitely going to win it.
If Arsenal somehow can maintain a 5-point buffer at the end of this month here,
that's yours.
It's still not ours, but it'll be a phenomenal effort,
yeah,
guys.
Villa.
What a fixture list.
Brentford. Brentford might be
sticky.
Brighton or Brentford?
Brentford.
Well, they're playing
Brentford
both.
Brentford at 10th, yeah.
No, but I'm thinking off the two, is it Brighton or Brentford?
Brighton are currently a little bit higher up, but. Yeah. Big games. If you go down to say
Aston Villa, I've always been wary of.
I hate to give Arsenal credit. Their backline has been so good.
Yeah.
You know, not conceding cheap goals except what happened this weekend. Mm-hmm. But that was always my biggest thing. We've got to test out during this December, the squad depth. That is going to be the biggest thing.
Squad defender depth.
Yeah,
I mean, not having Gabriel,
huge.
Saliba took a bit of a knock, didn't play against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Have to be monitored. But 8 games, guys.
But
eight,
you get through
eight
this.
8 games and 6, is it 5 of them that are in the league?
Six.
So one Carabao, one Champions.
If you win 3, if Arsenal manages to win, okay, let's say not lose 3.
That's the big thing. Don't drop.
If you don't lose the 3, even if it's a draw, win 3, maybe, yeah, just don't lose 3 games.
You're saying is 12 points would be a massive return here.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. So that's a nice buffer to have.
So if you look at Man City, they're off 5 points back right now.
But it's Pep's time. You know Pep wins the league in December, guys. That undefeated run of his. That's the thing about Pep.
If you just look at their November, okay, they beat Bournemouth 3-1 when Bournemouth were doing well.
Yeah.
They beat Dortmund 4-1 in the Champions League when they were looking all right. They beat Liverpool 3-0, which obviously was the result.
Thrashed Liverpool.
They then lost to Newcastle 2-1. They then lost to Leverkusen 2-0. Yeah. And they just squeaked past Leeds 3-2. So now, if you look at their fixtures, Flex, to bring it up here. Yeah, so they've got 7 games.
They're going to cruise, yeah.
But they play 1st January, I think. I think 1st January they play Chelsea.
I'm sorry. If you lose more than 3, going back to Arsenal, if Arsenal loses more than 3, City will be much closer. Because look at their fixtures compared to yours.
Yeah. Fulham away.
I don't want to say these are easy, but these are easy. Yeah,
this is definitely easier. Yeah. Okay, so this is the thing, Chaz, to your point. Pep loves the December.
Yeah.
So this week, Fulham away, Sunderland home. Real Madrid away, Champions League. I mean, Liverpool beat them. That shouldn't be the biggest thing. They just lost to some other... small Inyana team in La Liga. December 14th, Crystal Palace away will be a big one. The Carabao Cup, they got Brentford at home. 20th December, they got West Ham at home. And then 27th December, Forest away. So
they got more space than Arsenal.
Yeah. And they got more space.
I think their only challenge in this fixture, I would say for me, is probably West Ham and Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Because Crystal Palace is away. They're playing Crystal Palace away. Maybe West Ham home. But I think West Ham's like
a bottom 5 team.
Yeah. I know, but exactly that.
Yeah, look.
Exactly for
Crystal
that
Crystal Palace
reason.
Away is the only game that
Crystal
they're
Palace
at.
And maybe Forest. Maybe Forest. If they decide to show up. But
this Forest plays well at home as well.
Yeah, this is
but
Pep's
I do
time.
Think because of how desperate West Ham is. They might drop. That's the one that might surprise him. But the rest, no.
So Man City and Pep have got a chance.
Yeah.
So look at Chelsea.
Surprise team.
surprise
why
team.
Why is Chelsea a surprise team? Chelsea because have been consistently a top four team for the last 20 years. Why is it a surprise team?
Let me land it. Because everybody thought it was going to be a two-horse race between Arsenal and Liverpool.
No one thought that.
Everyone thought that.
Liverpool was defending champs. Of course, you never thought they were good.
No one thought that. Guys, when everybody discarded
Kate,
Man City.
I know it's a tough time right now.
But no, hang on.
But at the start of the league, Liverpool had hope.
Yeah, we didn't expect you to be ninth.
No, I know that. But to say that we expect you to be Arsenal and Liverpool.
100%.
Man City with and Man Chelsea, City, guys, have always been in the top four.
But they were always 3-4.
Yeah, 3-4.
But what I'm saying, like,
we started at the beginning of the season, I've got a take.
You're saying Chelsea's a surprise team. Chelsea have consistently been a top
four
team.
Even Chelsea fans will say that.
A surprise team.
To be in the mix.
They're
a point behind City.
They've always been in the mix. Well,
if you look at their November, they beat Spurs 1-0.
Yeah.
That's not a great margin for against the bottom team. They drew with Karabakh FK. Okay. Sound like goat herders. They beat Wolves 3-0. Everyone does. They beat Burnley 2-0.
Everyone but Liverpool.
Then they got a bit of a stride. Eh? Barcelona, they beat them 3-0.
Everyone beats Barcelona now.
That's not true. But
not true. But then, and obviously, like, they were down to 10 men quite early against Arsenal, and they held on.
Is that the United game in the month of November? Was that October?
Must have been.
I think we gave them hands there. I just wanted to make that
so check. If you look at Chelsea, okay, so I did notice last night for the first time that the FIFA World Cup champions little circle
on
their shirt.
World champs, they are world champs.
That was great.
That's very questionable. I know I said play what's in front of you, but...
They're world champs. They lifted it.
That's all right. Play what's in front of you in a sauna that no one's watching. Flex, can we have a look at Chelsea's December coming up now? Just again, to quantify it. So they also got the big fixtures. So they got Leeds away. Leeds are... you'd like to think they're going to be strong, but
they're
it's
gonna
just...
going to pick it up, man.
Bournemouth twice.
Leeds just ran Man City close. They got Bournemouth away. Champions League of Atalanta away.
Newcastle.
Everton home, you're going to back them, going to get that. Cardiff City in the Carabao, easy game. Newcastle away, Aston Villa
those
away.
Those last three are not.
Bournemouth home. So
that last three is
tough. That last three is not.
So tight and so tough. So again, Chelsea have a tougher run to stay in the mix end of December. I'm not just putting it down because I want to have like a lot of impetus in the show, but December is such a huge month for title contenders. 100%. Especially with the amount of games and the short space of time. Yeah. And it's what it does for testing your squad.
Yeah.
Guys, we need to move on to some cricket because I think we can gild the lily for everyone football because of where we are right now. It's a hugely exciting time. But yeah.
Points behind. That's not bad. That's three games. I'm just saying, please keep that take, guys.
I just when we catch up in January and they've dropped and Arnold Slaughter's out.
I'm just saying that's three games.
I'm glad you just say because I don't even think you want to watch Liverpool play three games right now. So I mean, like, the thing with the Proteas right now is that it's something so positive. I love celebrating these guys. It's weird. Like, we all know, we beat India 2-0. Fantastic. We actually, in Shuki Conrad's words, we did make them grovel. He meant it in a cricketing sense. I will take it in a cricketing sense.
Yeah, everyone got to chill out on that.
Everyone got to chill out a little bit because you don't get the opportunity to assert dominance. Like, think what the Boks did against Ireland in the scrums. The Proteas did that in India to the Indian team. Yeah. Get that chance, make that chance. We won by 408 runs. There is something weird happening online right now where people are trying to find drama, controversy, and just shit talk.
It's unhappy people.
It's unhappy.
Guys, we do not need to compare this current test team to anybody. We need to celebrate them because they gave us the world championship.
Yep.
They won. They're world champions. Yep. At Lords, they won. Yep. And they keep getting better now.
100%.
I mean, like, is that enough for you? Because that's enough for me.
No, for me,
that's enough for me.
I don't need to compare this Proteas team to anybody.
What are they comparing it to? I missed that one.
Is
it the Graeme Smith era?
But people are going out of their way to say you guys weren't that great because now Temba's captain, we now are much greater. Which, like, no one's saying Temba's not the fucking best captain right now. I think what he does for that team is great. I think the sum of his talents, abilities, and presence. It's so good for it. But it's so weird how now we are trying to retrospectively down
it's
guys.
Oh, it's reverse. Okay, I was thinking the other way around.
Because to say like Graeme Smith compared to Temba Bavuma, is that
I just don't see the point of it.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Because this is why I don't see the point of it. Test cricket has changed so much over the years and how people prioritize it within calendars.
Yeah.
It's played a little bit differently. Test cricket, to me, is a whole new game now. Look at the Ashes series right now. The guys aren't taking it past the third day.
Yeah, that's
that's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy, Test cricket as we know it.
Yeah.
So this whole comparison thing is a big talking point right now, which, again, it's just like Eben's eye gouge. Yeah. It is marring so much positivity within this current team.
I don't necessarily think it mars. I think everybody, if you're the leader of the pack, you're always going to get slammed at some different level. What the issue is, and it's something that you guys have brought up, is teams aren't batting 5 days. They don't know how to manage it. And even worse, a test nation like India has so many problems because I think the focus has become so T20 inclined that players do not know how to finish off an innings and manage an innings. And that is the biggest cry from the Indian press is, guys, how are we breeding talent? You have a whole bunch of all-rounders, but we're a spin nation. Yeah. You're not beating batsmen who can go through the processes. Yes, it's tough, but let's get to day four. But you're not even trying to get to day four. But then you see how they perform in 50 overs, and then they smack the ball around.
Absolutely. And I think for me, as great as it is, I mean, because a lot of focus has been switched from the Indian press, is how bad things have gone for India. That's true. Yeah. But also, they sort of like takes away from how great South Africa 100%, has been.
100%. Yeah. Applying themselves.
I think you can have the two conversations independently. 100%. And for me, there's definitely something wrong that's gone wrong in India that needs to be looked at, because teams used to dread going to India for a reason, because spin heavy, obviously. But what I've noticed is what you mentioned, Chaz, the all-rounders. There's just too many of them. And it's almost like, what's his name? The coach is picking a lot of guys, spinners who can bat.
Yep.
And that's not Test cricket.
Yep.
Test cricket, you look at Simon Harmer, you look at Timba Bavuma, prime examples. Timba Bavuma is not necessarily an IPL or our version of. Yep. Neither is Simon Harmer, but those are
marquee players in Test.
The players that probably won us this Test.
Yeah.
Timba Bavuma was critical in the first Test, and Simon Harmer all round being the player of the tournament. Look at just those two.
Yep.
You look at the Indian side. A lot of those guys are off spinners who can bat, who've done well in the IPL.
Yeah.
And also you look, he's tried to do a lot of matchups. You saw there's a lot of left and right hand batsmen at the same time. Historically, in Indian teams, you could have 9 batters, all left hand, all right handed, none of them. And it's like it's trying to balance. It's not working.
It's bits and pieces.
It's not working.
It works in a T20 when you've got players, you can do things at various stages in the match.
Yeah.
But where is the next Dravid? Where is the next Ashwin?
Tendulkar.
Those kind of guys.
They're not batting it out. But as you were saying, the two things can be right at the same time is how great are the Proteas. Mm. A majority of this test series was won in the field. Huge catches from Aidan Markram. I think he had 5 or 6.
Nine.
I think he had 5 in the first one and then 4.
Nine in the...
Yeah. And Marco Janssen's one to win that thing. And 93 with the bat. See, it shows where the cricket focus is. We've got guys who really want to show up in tests, masters of test cricket. Timba Bavuma, as much as they say he's not a T20 player, look what he does with the bat at the long form game.
Incredible technique. I've always said it. The guy's technique is like no other.
Yeah.
It's a joy to watch, and he applies himself. Yeah. It's interesting for me because, firstly, it's great the Proteas are winning, but secondly, it's like test cricket's in a very strange place right now.
Yeah.
The Ashes, the first test was over in 2 days. It's like they had all booked golf for that third day.
They're like, yo, we out of here, bro.
And that was just the way it happened. So test cricket's always in that place where I just think that it's not 5-day cricket. We stopped calling that a long time ago. It's test cricket. You're testing abilities. Whether it takes 2-3 days, so be it.
South Africa and India went to a 5-day, right? It was 5 days, guys. The last one.
Well, that's because we
smacked them around for a day.
No, yeah, no. I mean, we didn't need to
draw it out.
It's almost like we're playing for a draw there. I was quite upset because who's 100 who we're waiting for?
Yeah.
That should have been it. Or was someone's 50? And then you look like Marco Janssen. Janssen's 100 now is what we're waiting for.
We actually batted again. We didn't enforce the follow-on.
Yeah.
That was what took
that was fine. I didn't,
and you never gamble with the follow-on. That was my thing. Don't gamble with the follow-on.
Yeah, we didn't
Australia
have
learned that lesson far too hard.
We didn't have... Yeah, but even that, I think we beat... We're ahead by 500
and something.
That's ridiculous. Really? 400 was more than enough.
It was finished them off. I love that.
It was a tactic, and good on them. Good on them.
Yeah.
Ashes-wise, though, going forward, guys, we've had one test. The next one's going to be the day-night test with the pink ball in Adelaide.
Mm.
Are you excited about it? Is it just going to be part of your general sort of December mix?
I mean, I'll watch.
Because in the past, the Ashes test was a big thing.
Yeah.
The one down under in December, it was a huge deal. We all get excited about the MCG, the SCG, Boxing Day, New Year's.
Depends how it goes. You know, I think with test cricket, if we're not getting drawn out type of series and the chess match of test, then we might as well just have 50 overs. You know, but that's how I felt with that first game, the first game of the Ashes is. It's just it's craziness. It's 50 over cricket, you know.
Baseball.
Yeah. So I just like, guys, you can't tell me T20 has taken away from test cricket this much, because you can see guys don't know how to bat out in innings and bowl out in innings. Or, well, shout out to the bowlers, but I'm like, we're not batting out anything. So 1.5 days batting and then test over 2 days?
That was embarrassing.
That's bad for the Ashes.
I'm embarrassed, especially considering how the emphasis that England especially puts on the Ashes. It's almost like they, I don't want to say they ignore the other tests. They don't put as much gravitas towards the other tests against other nations as much as they do. But they do. Ashes is a highlight of their calendar year. And so to be bowled out
2 days.
In both innings, under 70 overs, and that was ridiculous. Because especially on day two, they had that test. They had a lead of 99 runs and 9 wickets at hand.
On a tricky pitch, they got good going with the bats.
They should have had that. At least gotten an extra day. So I don't know. For me, I want test cricket to go back to 5 days. So I want to go back to a time where a lot of players who didn't play all three formats. Yep. I miss that time. Going back to Simon Harmer, I'm going to keep going back. I love seeing Simon Harmer. Every time he shows up at test cricket, you can tell there's somebody who's hungry.
Yep.
He's showing up there. He's like, this is the only game. It's almost like, this is the only game I'm going to get, type of a. I want that attitude. And so you get all these guys now who plays all three format, and it's almost like, you can't approach all three. You're not AB de Villiers, unfortunately. No, you can't approach all three the same way.
I'm loving this, guys. I think this is a broader conversation we can all have over December. Yeah. Because, like, James Anderson is untouchable because of his record, because he was just a test player.
And he
made peace with the fact that he was only ever going to play with a red ball.
And
it's a fascinating... Yeah. I think now, where the Proteas are as a true test team and where this Ashes series is going... I think by the time we come back next year and talk about this, cricket's going to be in a very interesting place. Yeah. We all know what's happening. T20 World Cup's coming up in 2026. ODI World Cup's going to be here in 2027 in South Africa. But we don't play another test match until September.
That's crazy.
But when we do...
That's crazy.
When we do, we play India, Australia, England.
Jeez.
So test cricket is always that thing that you go... It's the gift for me that keeps on giving.
Absolutely.
It's just how it's going to be wrapped.
Yeah, we may come back
in December analogies here.
we may come back, and these four remaining tests are actually great. Yeah. So here's hoping. Hoping we at least get two games that go to 5 days.
Guys, we're going to wrap it up with 2026 as a rugby year again. We want to give you ammo to going into December sports conversations, and this one is a huge thing. So in December, right now, we just said we are the best team in the world. Yep. Now, what does the best team in the world have to do? They have to stay the best team in the world at every single chance. Flex, let's get the first slide up there of what's happening. So the Nations Cup has come out, okay?
Yeah. Oh.
The Nations Cup is, I love it. I think it's so smart.
I love this idea, bro.
It's made things tighter. We don't have to have this, Italy's coming for July.
Yeah.
Every single test match we now play counts and it's huge stakes.
I don't get it. So the Super League without consequences, just a lot of...
What do you mean without consequences? It's got all the consequences.
And we're lifting.
What do you mean?
We lift the trophy off the
What are the consequences? Of these teams, no one gets relegated. No one gets...
There is a relegation.
That's coming. Yeah. Granted, right now,
but there is a
talk. If you're the top team, you're the top 12?
Yeah.
Got it? Cool. But now the whole thing is that the South plays the North. So for these fixtures here, we play England. Fantastic. That's the game we should have had last week.
Yep.
So we play all of the Six Nations teams basically, and then the Six Nations teams play all the South guys. Yep. So we in pool play, Kate, before we get to the finals, we'll never play another Southern Hemisphere team. Sorry, Flex, pop it up there again. So we play England here in SA. None of these games have been confirmed yet venue-wise, but England on July 4th, Scotland on July 11th, Wales on July 18th. So rather than having a dicky tour where Georgia or Portugal might fill a game here or there, we play high-stakes Nations Cup. Okay? It's exciting.
If you insist.
Then we have the greatest rivalry tour.
This is what I'm looking forward to.
So how this works is that every 2 years will be the Nations Cup. It's not every year, Kate. So your beloved Rugby Championship.
I know this.
And all those things will come back. The greatest rivalry tour is every 4 years. So in 2030, we're going to go to New Zealand. So we get Nations Cup and rivalry tour in the same year, which is just incredible. Mm. So there won't be a Rugby Championship, but that's fine. All Blacks, 4 tests. One of them is going to be at FNB Stadium, which is hugely exciting. That's... that I think is the September the 5th one. Yeah. And then September 12th will most likely be Twickenham. So we get that. And then once we've had the 4 tests against New Zealand, it's now the November series against the other teams from the Six Nations. So we have Italy, November the 7th. France, the big game again. They'll still think it's a redemption match.
No, we can't still be talking redemption at this stage.
14th November and then Ireland, 21st November. Which, Kate, brings us to a World Cup final every 2 years, basically.
Why? So now,
why not?
Why? People, go for it, Kate. Before I
back it.
Because isn't this the same reason we don't like the FIFA World Cup to be in every 2 years? This is the exact same argument. Who does it serve?
Do you think it diminishes from the...
It absolutely does. Do you know how excited we were to play Ireland? Mm. The banter, the build, like, there was just so much. Now, if we play Ireland twice every other 2 years, it's like, I want Ireland to think they're actually our rivals.
Yeah.
Now, if we play them every other day, that's just going to diminish that for me.
We'll play them once a year. So we're essentially going to play these guys once a year anyway. All we're doing is putting it into a league.
This
is 2026, right?
Yeah.
2027 is a World Cup, guys. We see them again.
Well, we won't because they won't get past the quarters. But it's basically, we've already got the fixture. Because rugby is so small compared to football, right?
Yep.
I love your point there.
Yep.
The Rugby World Cup's 48 teams. We just spoke about how strong continents are in football. Rugby doesn't have that. Rugby has 10 teams.
Okay, but how does this help? How does this help grow the sport?
I think, look, more eyes on rugby because we have the biggest fixtures. And you have games
but
where
it's the same teams,
for some,
Jazz.
It counts for something.
It's the same
like
teams.
Like the Nations Cup. Let me start with the Nations Cup, right? Nations Cup, you're playing for something instead of having the random test that we usually have where we play Fiji, Georgia. Well, I think we do play. Will we not play Fiji
we
or Georgia?
We need that, though, for the... Okay, so remember before the Rugby Championship. Right. Remember, just think about Argentina before they started playing the Rugby Championship. Where were they? They were the whipping boys of the competition for at least 3 years.
Right.
Last season and the season before, what did they do? They beat everybody at least once. Mm. That's what you want. Fiji will never catch up to South Africa at this rate. Neither will Georgia. Neither will Wales. I mean, Wales are
self-inflicted.
Yeah.
Regress.
Thank you. That's the point. Guys, Samoa used to be a nation that you were excited. I mean, there were thugs. But they were exciting to play against. When was the last time you watched a Samoa game? Now you're going to have two nations invited to this. It's literally the top five teams that can win the World Cup for the next 20 years, plus a few other teams. That's what is in the Nations Cup. When, give Fiji a chance. Have you seen Fiji in the sevens?
Yeah.
Fiji are a powerhouse in the sevens.
But what you're
trying to say, there's no, literally all the Nations Cup teams, those are the ones who are going to win the World Cup the next 5, 10, 15 years at least. Mm. Next
sorry,
World Cups.
Sorry, Flex, can you bring up that last slide there? It's got the entire Nations Cup thing here.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
who's invited there? I see Japan.
It's the top 12 teams.
It's top 12 teams. But, and then they get relegated as of last year.
It's the top 12 teams.
As of next year, the last two teams will be relegated.
The whole thing about growing the game, it's one of those things that I feel is like, it's a help and
it's
a hindrance.
It's too much rugby. It's too much
it's
rugby.
It's a help and a hindrance because there's only so much you can do. And everyone goes on this whole like, oh, let's care about the small nations. Okay, cool. But what are the small nations going to ultimately do? You want them to have a fair chance. I get that. I really do. Fiji, okay, cool. If you can give them all the resources in the world, but they're not going to have a local league, these teams only have a ceiling. And if we keep looking at their ceiling, the game itself won't go forward.
Yeah.
So it's a really inconvenient truth.
Does Argentina have a league?
Yeah, they've got rugby, Super Rugby South America.
Okay, yeah, okay, they have that. But my point, I'm going to keep going back to literally Argentina. Because Argentina, where the likes of, not Fiji, maybe Georgia are right now, just a couple of years ago. But they were invited to the Rugby Championship, and a lot of people were like, why are you doing this? It's taking away from the quality of the sport.
But it's,
Argentina use that to the...
But in that case, it's really not. If we've got a Nations Cup here, Fiji's getting exactly what you're asking for. It's going to happen.
Because it's there.
But what I'm saying, though, the top 10 teams are still the teams who were playing the rugby championship, the teams who were seeing in the Six Nations.
But they make the sport.
The teams are still in the India.
But they are the sport. There's no sport without them.
I get that.
They
but what I'm
everything.
Saying is you literally, you have the Rugby World Cup now every 2 years with this. That's what I'm saying.
But these fixtures are already happening.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're not, but
she's
I'm saying
just,
to whose benefit.
She's not feeling it.
It's just too much rugby for me for
yeah, the one thing,
same amount of fixtures.
Yeah, the same amount of fixtures doesn't change anything that
you could have.
In the
you
mix.
could have done something for the sport, and you're not. That's my gripe.
Because that's the one bit of clarity I wanted: is are they adding more fixtures where it takes away from your
see?
It just takes away from the rugby championship.
We've just said how
tour.
The Boxer played 5 Test matches in November.
Yeah.
Now we're doing it with that.
With a trophy.
In July, we played 4 test matches. Yeah. Here, we're playing 3 test matches.
Look, I'm excited for
every 2 years, guys.
Let me not be a weird guy about change.
Right, every 2 years, and then literally a year after that is a Rugby World Cup. Every year.
That's what happens in football with the Euros.
No. It's the Euros are there, then you've got AFCON there, then you've got someone thing there.
But it now you're bringing things away from the World Cup.
But what, now, an example of that would be if... gosh, we don't even have that because...
Oh, okay. Super League.
No. That's what I'm saying. It's Super League without the consequences of Super League. You would take the teams that were AFCON, take the teams, the Euros and all of that and give them their own competition every 2 years. That's literally what you're doing. Yeah. And that's what they'll be doing
Kate,
in football.
I think that, so for me, I don't see
the point.
You're saying the compromise is Nations Cup should be every 4 years. Just like the World Cup
to
be 4 years.
You don't need the tournament. You've got the World Cup. I want to look forward to meeting a France like every 2 years or every 4 years. And
but
like,
we don't. We play them individual tours. Yeah.
Not every year.
With no consequences.
Not every year, but same thing with
these. That's what I'm saying. Like this time around, for example, we missed out on England. That's exciting now to see England in the World Cup. Not in the Champions Nations Cup, but in the World Cup 2027, where we might meet England.
See,
I want to be excited for that. It builds up. It's going to build up to a nice climax. Now, every 2 years, you see these guys. I promise you, for me, it diminishes the rivalries.
I think it gives you what rugby we want to watch. I think for me, it's you want to see big nations play against big nations. And
not every day.
To the point that you were making. I love an El Clasico. So I want to see the big nations. And it's ultimately, those are going to be your drivers for engagement. And
okay,
that's
so
what we say.
El Clasico, you have it twice a season, right? Unless it's the... Unless
Champions League, you might catch me in Champions League.
But that's what I'm saying. It's always exciting when it's like, oh my goodness, we might not. Soweto Derby is the same thing. We've got 2 guaranteed Soweto Derby.
Yeah.
And then we might get another one. It's exciting. The fact that now it's guaranteed. I'm going to have 4 Soweto Derbies in a year. No, it takes away from the excitement.
No, I get you. But rugby's always been different. It's always been its own little silo. I just think that if you look what football is and where football is.
And this opens it up, yeah.
We're getting closer to that. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I really don't. Because we're playing the same amount of games. Kate, the frequency of those games is what your point is. And I totally get that. But to your other point, with this thing, it solidifies another platform for rugby, for more money to come into rugby from other brands.
Money.
And when that money comes in, those teams that you mentioned earlier,
get a better taste.
They've got more of a chance.
Yeah.
It's a small chance, but it's still a net more than what they have right now.
No,
I'm going to end it on that. You guys can debate this all you want.
We didn't debate
That's wrapping up November for the show. Shaz and I are going to be in Cape Town on the 23rd of December.
Yes, sir.
We've got some cool live shows coming up, actually. We're going to be there in live. Real time for the Betway SA20. So catch us with that. If you didn't catch last week's show when we were actually at Montrose Primary School in the rain, Shaz and I had a really nice chat with Donovan Ferreira and Steve Stolk, along with Moshe Ndiki, who is the player 20 for the Joburg Super Kings.
Yeah.
If you haven't got your tickets yet for the Betway SA20, sa20.co.za. Kate, thanks so much for joining us as always. Lovely having you here. Shaz, we've got a big December ahead.
100%.
And
enjoy.
Sports. Sport is sporting hard this coming month. Catch you next time.
Oh, what a vibe at the game tonight. Well played, Dad. Look at that, Cooks. That's what it's all about, creating memories at the cricket.
Just beautiful to see. But creating memories? What about creating content?
Oh, that's going to be all over social media tonight, Cooks.
I'm still wondering, are they here for selfies or sixes?
Oh, they've just seen themselves on the big screen.
Whether you've come for your family or followers, everyone's welcome to Incredible. Betway SA20, 26 December to 25 Jan. Get tickets now at sa20.co.za.